3-1 pitch, swing and a drive. Deep to right field, way up there, way out of here. Goodbye, baseball.
Eight strikeouts for the King tonight and make it 23 consecutive scoreless innings for Phoenix.
Strike three called on the outside corner, and there it is.
It's time for the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast.
Kyle Seager, that just happened. Thank you very much.
Now, here's your host, Gary Hill.
Welcome back to the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast. Gary Hill back with you, the official podcast of the Seattle Mariners. Thanks for being here, and this will serve as our wrap-up show for the 2014 season. Going to take some time off after this one from the podcast, but yeah, we're going to be back. They'll be popping up throughout the winter, obviously not as frequently as daily as it's been during the season because, you know, no games. But we will be we'll be coming at you throughout the fall and winter from time to time. We'll keep it going, especially when there's news and Hot Stove League and with things going on, interviews. I still have some features that I'm going to get to. Some questions. Keep the questions coming, too, because there's a lot that I'm going to get to. There's some things I'm working on right now that I'm going to get to as well. So at Gary Hill Jr., you can always tweet me anytime. I'll talk baseball at anytime, so you can tweet me whenever. And GaryHillPXP@gmail.com. You can always email me with a lengthy question or just for the heck of it. Just if you have anything you want me to cover in a podcast or just any question at all. So I'll be anytime, fall, winter, whatever. So the conversation will continue over the winter. And if you didn't hear yesterday, thank you again. You've been a huge part of what's gone on here throughout this season. It's been so much fun for me. I hope you've had as much fun as I've had, not only with the season, with the podcast as well. It's really added some enjoyment for this season for me, and I hope it has for you in at least a small way. So again, thank you. I do have a lot of people to thank too that you heard on a daily basis, and some people you didn't hear on a daily basis, but certainly contributed. Aaron Goldsmith, who was so supportive in this effort all season long and did so many of the interviews that you heard, and really fantastic stuff. I'm amazed. Aaron and I went back and just, and not really a pat on the back kind of thing, but just went back and talked about and put a list together of some of the people we've had on the podcast. It's really incredible. And not only everyone involved with the Mariners, I think we had every player from at one point or another, just about everyone on the coaching staff, trainers. I mean, so many different people involved with the Mariners. Obviously, the broadcasters, heard them on a daily basis. But we started talking about some of the other guys. I mean, all-stars, MVPs, Hall of Famers. I mean, such a long list. And you know, Eckersley and Jim Palmer and Don Sutton and, of course, Mike Trout. And just some of the biggest stars in the game at one time or another on the podcast. It's really fun to look back on, to see and hear all the different stories and think about who we had on over the course of the summer, which was a lot of fun. So thanks a lot to him. Big contributor. Shannon Dreher, of course, outstanding. Her stuff was sensational, as always. The interview is fantastic. Always interviewing the players and really going in-depth, and always great stuff. Appreciate all her efforts throughout the season. Came on a few times as well. Appreciate that. Kevin Kremen, so supportive of this as well. Just does so much behind the scenes, and really in all phases, broadcast, getting us on the air, everything. Rick Riz, Dave Sims, Mike Blowers, you know, the whole broadcast team, can't thank them enough for everything that they did. And some names that you hear a lot on the broadcast, you never hear their voices, but Matt Harden, Matt Nelson, Kyle Brown, they're the ones that I have to text or call if I didn't get a piece of audio, and I'm texting them at midnight or just random times to try and get that last little piece I need to put the show together. They're fantastic all season long. I can't say enough about how much help they've been, and they need to be recognized for that, and I certainly appreciate appreciate their efforts as well. And so many guests that have come on, especially multiple times. I mean, there are so many through. I wish I could thank everyone, but you know, I do. Here's the blanket thank you for everyone. But some really stand out. Colin O'Keefe, for example, who's been on several times, including after a big Mariners win when I contact at 11:30 after the post-game show and still willing to and happy to come on. And so thanks to him. And Scott Weber has been on a few times as well from Lookout Landing. And oh, there's been so many different people. And thanks for being a part of this. I feel like it's been kind of a podcast community. So many of you have been here from the beginning, which is awesome. And I want to thank you for that as well. So here's what we're going to do on the very last one. This is a good one. I think this is a good way to end kind of the 2014 before we phase into the off season. So there's a few different things going on here. The last bullpen banter of the season. So that's a good way to go out. The last bullpen banter as Charlie Furbush. He's going to hand out an award, so you don't want to miss that. I have a conversation with Billy Mack, local musician, longtime local musician. He's fantastic. He is working on a project that's near and dear to my heart that I know many, many of you will be very much into. So that comes up. That's a good conversation. Aaron Goldsmith and I just kind of bat around the season right after the fact, talk about the loss, the season, moving forward, everything. That conversation comes up. I'm going to leave you with something very cool. I think that will put a smile on your face. There was so much conversation about a one-game playoff and, you know, everyone hoping the Mariners would have that one more game against the Oakland A's, game 163. It didn't happen, but with the Angels in town, Gary DeSarcina is on the Angels coaching staff. And, you know, he was a long-time shortstop and a very good player, all-star, good career, never made it to the postseason, had one chance in 1995 when the Angels looked like they were going to win the division, one-game playoff, and, of course, the Angels lose. His memories from that day are sensational. I think these stories will put a smile on your face, especially if you remember those times. And if you remember the way Randy Johnson pitched in that game, I think that's something you'll definitely remember. And so that all that's coming up as we end things and phase on into the offseason. I know, boy, today was tough with no baseball, no game to look forward to. It's such a sudden end when you're in it, and bam, it's over. So I know many of you with me still in kind of recovery mode, dealing with the sudden loss to the end of the season and no more baseball until the spring. But again, I'll be with you from time to time, and hopefully you'll be with me too as we move on through the off season. So first things first, after the ball game, I thought I'd start with a conversation. Here's me with Aaron Goldsmith just talking about this season in general.
With so many mixed emotions, because the ultimate high off of last night coming in, where hope was just ratcheted up. I mean, we were looking at a situation where maybe Holland's pitching. You know, Felix is on the hill. You win this game. Texas wins the game. You're playing again the next day. You're playing Oakland into the postseason. And then Felix comes out dominating. The highs and lows of the Oakland A's, they end up winning. And then it's disappointing at the same time. There is a lot of hope for the future as well. But so many mixed emotions all wrapped up in a few hour time span.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. And there's nothing more bittersweet. And most of the times it truthfully feels more bitter than sweet than the final day of the season. Yes, you're everybody's looking forward to returning to a sense of normalcy. But this is your life. This is what you do. This is who you are. And so to have it end so abruptly, I said earlier during the play-by-play, the end of the season, the final out of the year is like going from 60 to zero, and you have to kind of figure out what your purpose is all of a sudden outside of Mariners baseball. But after that win last night, Gary, that you're referencing, which was just such an electric win in every sense of the word for this franchise, for this team today, for the fan base going forward. I was talking to Rick today long before even Mariners Magazine, and you might have been here too, and I was saying I have to keep reminding myself that we need the A's to lose as well.
Right.
Because as high as you were after last night's win, couple that with Felix going today, you felt like this team was unstoppable. And we saw the end result today. The Mariners end up winning. Felix would have struck out 100 if he was left
in
there.
It feels that way, right?
Doesn't it?
I mean, it feels like he just would have ran the table with the lineup.
He could have challenged that career-high 15 punch-outs that he got earlier in Tampa Bay. And it wasn't meant to be this year for the Mariners, unfortunately. But to your point, Gary, the hope that has now come along with this organization and for a fan base that is now learning to deal with that again in a very good way.
Yeah.
And this is, and we talked about it on the pregame show, over 2,000 games since the Mariners were last in the playoffs. 2,000 games. And this was the most important one in that stretch. I mean, that's saying something.
It's a great point. I think expectations have been raised heading into next year, and that's a good thing. And you look at this roster, it's returning a bulk of the roster, especially the core of the roster. And this pitching staff, who, by the way, ends with a 3.17 ERA, which smashes the club record. I mean, just destroys the club record. A great season all the way around. And you think about, you know, things didn't go according to plan necessarily when you talk about Paxton missing so much of the season. Walker, you know, really popped, and boy, does he leave with quite the last
impression.
That was
incredible.
Iwakuma missing a month. I mean, things didn't always go according to plan, yet they were sensational all season long. You return so much of that next year. The bullpen as well coming back next year. I mean, there's a lot of reasons to be tremendously excited about next season.
You figure this team went for a bulk of the season without a fifth starter.
Right.
And Paxton is electric. Taiwan Walker, hey, Lloyd said that when Lloyd was introduced, he said that he was very hopeful that he would be a member of the opening day rotation. That was not in the cards. But we saw what Jack and his scouts and everybody else who have watch Taiwan coming up, and they know the promise that he has. We saw what they saw with that start in Toronto, and the type of a big game pitcher that Taiwan can be. The rotation, nasty. The bullpen, filthy. We've talked about it. The Mariners just need a little more offense, and that has hamstrung the Mariners at times this year. But the Mariners have also had some streaks of getting the big hit and scoring runs off of lefties. It tapered out at the end of the season. But it's not as if the Mariners were inept the entire year in that category. There are so many good things for the Mariners this year, exceeding all the expectations, every single one of them you could have put on this team. It's always a sad way as we have MLB Network up here in the booth and watching the A's dogpile on top
all
of each other.
Yeah,
and you know, it stings, too, to speak very candidly, because you feel like the A's just backed into it.
Yeah.
They backed into it.
You know, and the other part that kind of bites at you a little bit, and I think we'll see it play out, is the American League is wide open. I mean, there's Baltimore's really good,
yeah,
but even they have their flaws.
And the Angels, for as much sex appeal that comes with the Angels with that offense, the rotation is right now is really, really hurting.
We were talking about before the game because Shoemaker was throwing a bullpen, and I felt like that was the biggest bullpen they've had all season because, you know, you take him out of the mix rotation-wise, an already thin rotation. I mean, they've gone Johnny Allstaff for a month with their fifth spot in the rotation. So C.J. Wilson has been
– boy, he is – what side of the bed is he going to get
right
up out of?
So, yeah, I mean, even they have in a series. And the Mariners have the kind of pitching where if you could have found a way in – I would have liked their chances, you know, to make some noise. But, yeah, that's the other part. And then there's always the aspect of, like a baseball game, when you lose a one-run game, there's always four or five moments that you look back on and say, you know, if that ground ball would have been somewhere else, if that would have been a call to strike, you know, there's
right.
So many little moments in a one-run game that you can look back on saying, if that would have gone differently, you could have won the game. Same when you finish one game out, because that's where it ends up. The music stopped. The Mariners were the team left without the chair, and it was just one game separating them. And, you know, it's tough because you can go back and say, you know, get two runs when Taiwan Walker dealt against Toronto. Get one of the other ones, Toronto.
Right.
Or for me, you know, you go back to the beginning of the season, they really dug themselves a hole to start. You get one game there. I mean, that's the tough thing about this. One game is the
drive. You'll drive yourself batty,
right,
and
right.
It's a natural instinct to think about that. But the only thing worse than being in the postseason hunt is not being in the postseason.
That's
hunt.
Exactly right.
It's true to in every sense of the word, because this is as gratifying and as demoralizing.
Yeah.
But the gratitude for it is what really shines bright here. To be in this situation, to come down to the final day of the season. When pitchers and catchers reported back in spring training, to think that if somebody would have told you then that we would have gone all the way to 162 and have 40,000 fans just wired here at the ballpark in Seattle. That's something special.
You know, and that's a great point, because September mattered. Every day up until the last season mattered. And I think it ignited a passion again, and I'm seeing it on the text of 710-710 talking about how it had – I mean, from the 206, most of all, this season reminded me that I could be emotionally invested in baseball again.
Don't be afraid.
Those keep on coming at 710-710, and I love it. And it ignited a spark. We saw it the last couple of days here at Safeco Field. It was sensational, and it really turned back the clock to those games in 2001 and 2000 where this place was so unbelievable, and it was back to the same atmosphere again, which was so much fun.
This is a team that you can start to have expectations for.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid to fall in love with them. I mean, this is a team that really is going to be making some noise for so many reasons. And this wants so badly to be a baseball town. We know that, Gary. I mean, we've talked about that. Candidly, the two of us and also on the air. And there's no doubt the NFL is king. But this is a town that can go nuts for the Mariners. And that's going to happen. You really sense that that's going to happen. We saw at the tail end of this season, and there are the pieces in place to have that really being the vibe, the tone going forward. No city loves their superstar like Seattle loves Felix.
Yeah, you can see it, too.
You can see
what
it.
What a moment.
You can feel it. It's one of the most gratifying moments of the year when you see something like that, and you don't see that anywhere else. You don't see it in Anaheim for Trout.
Right.
I can't speak to L.A. and Kershaw. Haven't seen that firsthand. It wouldn't be fair to make that point, but I don't think overall you see it like you see it here in Seattle. And all of our travels around baseball, it's special here. It's really special here. And let's extend that past Felix. It's never going to be the same level for everybody else. Felix is special. He's one of a kind. He's the king for a reason. But it can start to seep into the rest of this organization, the rest of this team, that love, that desire to watch on a daily basis. And hopefully we'll see more of that next year.
Good stuff coming in. From the 206, I'm a 26-year-old man. I never thought I'd be shedding tears over this baseball team in my car, unable to let the season and team go. I mean, how about that? I mean, that is...
We can all relate.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Because it's been the roller coaster, especially the last 2 weeks, right? I mean, they're in it. Toronto, and it's like, with Felix and Paxton and the highs and lows. And then this series, they're back in it. And, I mean, last night, hope was at an all-time
high.
Oh, my God. Like this, if you were to, I think, poll the average Mariner fan percentage chance of getting in, I think it would have been pretty high.
Absolutely.
Going into today. Really high. Especially with the way the A's were playing.
And the thought that Holland was going to go.
Thought that Holland was going to pitch,
and you thought that the A's were, oh, my gosh.
Yeah,
they are just
so tight.
They are so against the ropes right now.
Yeah. And then it to come crashing down. And it's really out of the Mariners' control. You know, as they're piling
tough.
Up a big fourth inning, you're watching it slip away as two more get added. But, you know, that's part of it, too. You put the destiny in another team's hand, and, you know, that's the unfortunate part is you never know what will happen.
To be a fan of any sport, baseball no exception, you got to open yourself to be a little heartbroken. And to get on the ride and to enjoy it for 162 games, it's a fantastic feeling. And to have a team that will take you this far, as Lloyd has said many times, there's a lot of teams that would want to switch places.
And Aaron will be on a few times during the off season as well. He was a frequent guest on the podcast. And again, I thank him so much for everything he did. Now, we're going to hand it over to Charlie Furbush. Time for Bullpen Banter one last time for 2014.
Hey, everybody. What's up? Another edition of Bullpen Banter. Hey, I'm Charlie Furbush. This is going to be a special edition. I'm going to give out my annual MVP award for the best banter of the year. The one, the only, Dominic Leone. Congratulations on winning the MVP or MVB, most valuable banter, if you may. How do you feel about receiving this award?
Yeah, I'm really grateful. It's been an honor to be on the show, and hopefully I don't take your place soon in the near future.
Yeah, well, maybe we can combo it. I don't know if you'll take my place. I mean, you could maybe borrow it. You know, maybe I'll take Rick's job. You know, you take my job, I take Rick's job.
We'll move up in the pecking order.
Exactly. Yeah. So, sorry, Rick. Sorry. But yeah, that's awesome. I'm glad to give out the my first ever MVB to Dominic. This is your third time on the show this year. This is pretty epic. I think there's only been one other person that's been on the show more than once in one calendar year. I think that was Tom Wilhelmsen, but...
Thanks. Appreciate it. You know, I hope the city of Seattle doesn't get sick of hearing my voice.
I mean, they'll never get sick of the epic Northeast edition that we did. You know, the bullpen band, bullpen banter with Dominic Leon and Charlie. Yeah. Charlie Furbush.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty good, huh?
Yeah, so good. Yeah. No, you know what it's like? It's like the first time you crack open a beautiful Maine lobster. And then you douse it in butter, and you chomp, and you chomp, and you chomp, and then you have another. And another.
You know, part of winning the MVP every year, well, I guess the first MVP, I'm going to hand the mic over to you and let you banter me. You know, I've been bantering all year. So once I hand the mic over, you let it roll, and I got to step up to the plate.
Here we go. You ready? Rapid fire question with Charlie Furbush. Let's start it off with Colgate or Crest?
I'm going to have to go with Colgate.
Okay. Next question. Most exotic animal you would like as a pet?
I would go with an orangutan.
I would say giraffe, so I'm right. Would you ever consider not being a left-hander?
No, I would never consider that because that would be stupid.
What is your fondest memory of being in the Northwest?
Fondest memory of being in the Northwest, besides playing on this amazing team, one of my fondest memories would be seeing Mount Rainier for the first time. Doesn't seem real, and I get to look at it out my window every day. Well, not every day, because it's not, you know, not out every day. But when it's out, it's awesome.
Quite glorious, I must say.
Quite glorious is an understatement. I would say that it's so magnificent and unbelievably, it's indescribable. There's no word that can describe it in the history of words.
Better facial hair now in the bullpen since we've had a recent shaving incident. Best facial hair, Mr. Charlie Furbush, or... a clean-shaven Joe Bimel.
I think it's a no-brainer. When I was told that I looked like I was stuck in the Civil War era and all I needed was a musket, I'm clearly the winner in there.
And finally, Charlie, I'm going to ask you one final question. If you had to pick one teammate, not bullpen member, but one teammate to spend a romantic evening at dinner with, a beautiful conversation over a giant steak from Jack's,
This could be the question of the year. You have just put me in such a predicament because you know that I like romantic dinners. And if I had to pick one guy on the team, I'm going to have to go ahead and pick my man, Kyle Seager.
Kyle Seager with a stunning upset.
Stunning upset. Sieg is a special man. I know he loves a good steak dinner. And maybe a glass of vino, wash it all down. You know, I think it'd just be a great night, and it would be one that I would remember the rest of my life. That's who I would pick if I had to pick that.
You know what? It's really funny because I interviewed Seager on my own, no microphone, no camera, no nothing, and he said that he would love to take you out. So we'll try and get that set up.
He would pay. He would pay too?
No. He said you're gonna have to pay. Oh, yeah.
Well, I guess we could split the bill.
I mean, you are in the best bullpen in the league, so, you know, you're going to have to pay.
And I have the best Fu Manchu that I've ever seen in my face.
Hands down.
And Sideburns McGee.
And you get a big league gift certificate. Oh. So.
All right. Well, Dom, hey, this could have been the best banter I've ever seen in my life. Dominic Leon, my friends, you are the MVP most valuable banter. What's up? Anyways, congratulations, and I appreciate it this year, man. We'll see you again.
Sounds good. Can't wait.
All right, that's it. You never know until you know. The sun will come up tomorrow. And if you don't know, now you know. That's it. That's a wrap.
I'm going to miss that. No more bullpen banter for a while. That is fantastic stuff. I love that every single week. So here's a conversation that I had with Billy Mack, local musician, who's fantastic. And here is the project that he is working on. And it involves Dave Niehaus. And I think you're going to be very interested in what he's doing.
Well, now we get to visit with a very special guest here on the program, Billy Mack. You know him as such a sensational musician here locally, nationwide. Fantastic. If you haven't seen him perform, go see him. He's fantastic. But he's here today to talk about something that's near and dear to my heart, and I know near and dear to many, many Mariner fans' hearts. Billy Mack, thanks so much for the time. We certainly appreciate it. Tell us what you're doing, what project you're working on right now.
I'm writing the biography of Dave Niehaus, the Mariners Hall of Fame broadcaster, who called the Mariner games for 34 years. I couldn't be more privileged to have this project underway, and my sincerest thanks to the Niehaus family, and in particular Marilyn Niehaus, for making this possible, and to my dear friend Rick Riz, without whom, and without Kevin Kremen, without whom this would not have happened.
Why did you want to write the biography of Dave Niehaus?
I first brought this project to Dave in 1992, and we were friends, and we discussed the idea, and a few weeks into discussing it, Dave just couldn't be convinced that anybody would want to read a book about him. He was that humble about his work and what he did. And so it's been a burning project in the back of my mind for a long time. And after Dave's untimely passing in 2010, I waited about a year or so, and it didn't seem that anyone was going to take this project on. So I went to Marilyn Niehaus through Rick Riz, and she was kind enough to read my proposal and to assent to my writing Dave's biography. It's this simple. I really think he was, if not the greatest, certainly one of the greatest baseball broadcasters I ever had the privilege of listening to.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I am right there with you.
And if I know you are, David.
I mean, we've talked about this before, too. He is one of the ones, he and Bob Blackburn, that really ignited this passion in me. And I know you get the same thing when you talk to fans and other broadcasters and everyone who knew Dave Niehaus, knew of Dave Niehaus, ever listened to Dave Niehaus. I can't imagine the reaction that you get working on this project.
He is universally revered and universally loved, admired by his colleagues, respected by players, broadcasters, writers. To give you an example, I was privileged to spend a short time with Dick Henberg, with whom Dave broadcast Angels games in the late 1960s and early 70s. And Dick Henberg was scheduled to spend a short time with me. We ended up spending well over an hour. A few minutes after we finished the interview, he went to his hotel room. I was down collating my notes, and he came back down to talk to me some more about Dave. That's the kind of respect he has.
And if people want to get involved, get more information, where can they go? Where can they find more about the project that you're doing? You have a great video as well that explains everything you're doing. It's really good stuff. Where can fans go?
Fans can go either to my website, which is billymack.com, B-I-L-L-Y-M-A-C, or they can, if they're Facebook fans, we have a Facebook page titled The Dave Niehaus Biography. So either one of those places, there's a link on my website to get you to the Facebook page, and we'll keep you up to date on any and all projects surrounding the biography.
In your work so far, is there anything that you've run across that surprised you that you didn't know about Dave Niehaus?
Well, a couple of things. One was that Dave had a longstanding friendship with Jim Nabors, who is most famous for his role as Gomer Pyle on television. But Jim and Dave worked together in a film warehouse at NBC in Burbank in the 1960s. And Jim would always tell Dave that he was going to be a famous singer, and Dave would always tell Jim that he was going to be a baseball broadcaster, and they both made good on their promise.
That's tremendous. What are some of the stories that have been told about Dave Niehaus in your research so far? What are one or two that really stand out?
Well, you know, the ones that really do touch me are the ones that come from the fans. Mm. Because everybody who met Dave Niehaus has their Dave Niehaus stories. It meant that much to them to meet him and to talk to him. So I will, on occasion, when I'm at Safeco Field, go out to his statue and just talk to fans. I talked to a young man who I think one of his most succinct things he told me was, that was my summer, me and Dave and my mom. And his connection to the fans and their connection to him is so visceral and so deeply felt. I just think it's remarkable.
It's a great point, too, when you think about it. I mean, he was everywhere. He was in your backyard at barbecues. He was in your car as you were driving to the beach. He was, you know, at family events. I mean, Dave Niehaus was everywhere you were at. No matter what was happening with the Mariners in a particular season, whether it was ups or downs, Dave was always there.
He was our conduit. He was the one who kept us not just informed, but in touch. And Dave's legacy gives me the opportunity to not only pay homage to him personally, but the book is also a homage to baseball broadcasters in general and to the art of calling a game, because they are the storytellers. You do it yourself, Gary. You know that when you bring us the game, you bring us the stories of the people that we love to watch and love to listen to their exploits. And you are the modern-day shamans who are in charge of the legends that we grow up with, literally.
And I think you have a unique perspective as well as an entertainer, because, you know, Dave had that along with telling the stories. He was an entertainer at the same time. When the big moment would arise, he was always right there to put the cherry on top that was always spectacular.
Unquestionably, he was an entertainer. And I always told Dave, he used to say, but the only other thing he would have wanted to do was be a singing piano player. He had a special regard for that. And I would always tell him the one thing I would leave singing for was to be a baseball broadcaster. Mm-hmm. And I had the great privilege of winning one of those contests in the 80s and broadcast half an inning of a game with Dave at the King Dome against the Texas Rangers. And it was the thrill of a lifetime. I've been fortunate enough to be backstage and around some fairly household names. But to sit in that booth with Dave Niehaus and experience that thrill and to see up close the way he approached what he did, meticulous, prepared, detailed. And that's why when the moment came to him, he was always ready for him. I think it was Bobby Knight who said, the will to win is a nice thing to talk about, but what's really important is the will to prepare to win. Mm. And yes, he was an entertainer. Yes, he loved the life. Yes, he had fun. But Dave Niehaus did the work, and that's why he was so good at what he did.
Yeah, no question about that. So give us details on how far along you are in the project, when you expect to be completed, just kind of the nuts and bolts of where you're at with the project.
Well, although I've predicted a closing date too many times, the first draft of the book is actually the second draft is just now finished. I'm just submitting. The book is going to be told like a baseball broadcast in honor of Dave. Mm. It begins with a pregame show, and his life is told in 9 innings. And I just sent the 8th and 9th innings off to the editor. I'm incredibly fortunate that the legendary sports reporter, raconteur, baseball and radio host, J. Michael Kenyon, one of the most voluminous minds I've ever encountered. J. Michael's doing the editing for me and guiding me through it, and he and Dave were lifelong friends. So, and one other thing I got to say, Gary, that Marilyn Niehaus, she's such a gem, and we all know what our spouses and partners mean to us in our lives, but without Marilyn Niehaus, there wouldn't have been a Dave Niehaus. She was there, there might have been, but she was there at his side, his constant companion, his constant support through whatever he had to do, and she deserves so much credit and is such a very special gal. So I hope to wrap this up sometime in the next 5 to 6 weeks. All that is really left is for me to connect with Jay Buhner, Ken Griffey Jr., Lou Piniella, do some final interviews. And I want to go back and talk to Rick and Kevin one more time. Dave Sims, Mike Blowers. So we're on the home stretch here.
And there is, as I mentioned before, an opportunity for fans to help as well. BillyMack.com, the place to go, the place to visit. You get more information on the project and how you can help. Billy, this has been fantastic. I appreciate the time. This will not be the last time that we talk about this, and certainly appreciate the time. And anything I can do to help with this project, just let me know.
Well, thank you, Gary. You should also know I'm a Gary Hill fan. You do great work. It was a joy to hear you on the radio broadcast last weekend, and I wish you every success. And thank you for continuing the great tradition of baseball broadcasters. We wouldn't be there, you know, the game wouldn't be the same without you.
Yeah, very kind words, and appreciate that conversation. Well, again, we'll talk to Billy Mack, too, as the rollout continues with the Dave Niehaus project. That is fantastic. I cannot wait. I'm clearly a huge, huge Dave Niehaus fan. I've talked about it from time to time that, you know, it was he that sparked a play-by-play passion for me. And Bob Blackburn, listening to, yeah, I used to have this old record player at home. I used to play this record. Can you believe this? Ah, this makes me sound ancient. But I used to play this record of Sonics highlights from the championship year. Do you even know what a record player is when I tell this story? But anyway, I just wore this record into the ground. Bob Blackburn just, it was the highlight reel of that season, the Sonics winning the championship. And the ball sails high in the air. Les Hobbiger does the Hobbiger hop. I mean, it's just fantastic. And, of course, Dave Niehaus as well. I'd bring up the clock radio to my bed and, you know, listen to his play-by-play as a kid. And, you know, that's what sparked it. It's like, yes, that's what I want to do. And it's always been a thrill for me whenever the Mariners do ask and have me sit in the booth and a little play-by-play, which I absolutely love. And it was Dave Niehaus that got it going for me as a kid. So I'm a big fan of the project, and I'll keep you updated on how that goes. Now we're going to end things with another Gary, and a great story that I think will put a smile on your face, especially if you remember these times. But here's Aaron Goldsmith with Gary DeSarcina.
Gary, back in early October, October 2nd of 1995, you were part of a play-in game, the Angels versus the Mariners at the Kingdome. You hit second. You're the starting shortstop. What do you remember the most about that game?
You know, a couple of things stand out. You know, getting ready, getting prepared for the game out in the right field line at the Dome and running sprints and looking at the out-of-town scoreboard and not seeing any games up there. That was the first time it really hit me that, wow, it's a pretty important game. There's no other games going on. And the second thing I remember is watching Randy Johnson walk out to the bullpen back in the Dome. The bullpen was down the left field line. And when he came out and we're doing our sprints down the right field line, he just had a look on his face, and his body mannerisms and his body language were just he was very prickly that day. So we knew we were in for a tough battle. He was a hell of a pitcher. And the way it all played out, where they lost down in Texas and we were beating Oakland and Anaheim, and they were probably had their bags packed to go on to New York, we knew they were probably a little bit upset about having to come back and play the play-in game. But those two things for me, looking at the out-of-town scoreboard and watching Randy walk down to the bullpen.
Describing Randy Johnson as prickly is a new one. What do you mean by that?
You know, surly. You know, like obviously you could tell that he didn't want to be in Seattle pitching in a playoff game, one-game play-in game. He wanted to be in New York pitching. Obviously they were out of their routine. You know, they had their mind set. Everyone was set on going to New York. And the way things played out, you know, probably pretty surly and not in a good mood. That's probably a better way to put it. But we knew we were in for it. You know, I hit second. Tony Phillips hit first. Tony struck out his first at-bat, walked by me. Amongst some expletive swearing and cussing, he said, "You better get ready because he's on." So we knew we were in for a tough game from the get go. And yeah, he's a Hall of Fame pitcher, and he did what he was supposed to do.
He struck out a dozen. He did not strike out you, however. How loud was the Kingdome that day?
Very loud. And I remember, you know, it being so loud when the last out was made. I believe Spike Owen pinched hit for me. By then, the game was out of hand, and Spike had started out as a Mariner, and Marcel Latchman wanted to pinch hit for him. And, you know, we knew Spike was going to retire, so what fitting place for him to end his career was pinch hitting there. But I remember sitting in the dugout and having just a swarm of people jumping over the dugout, and I wanted to get away, and I went into the clubhouse, and you could still feel the rocking nature of the stadium and how loud it was and the shaking. And they deserved it. I mean, they really played well down the stretch. They caught us, and they overtook us, and then they beat us in that one game. So we like to think that we helped build this ballpark and save baseball in Seattle.
Now the left-hander ready. Branding iron hot. The 1-2 pitch. Key inserted. It's over right over the heart of the plate. Randy looks to the skies. That is covered by the Dome and Bedlam, as the Mariners now erupt. 19 long years of frustration is over.
And finally, I think we'll end things with the finale of 2014. There are so many. I hope you heard the montage on the podcast yesterday. If you haven't, it's about the 42-minute mark of the podcast yesterday, the entire season montage. But let's end things on what I think is the signature call of the year, the height of hope, as the Mariners claim the second game of the series against the Angels. And at that point, it's all possible. And that's the beauty of baseball. It's all possible at that moment. Not only the next day winning, but forcing a wild card game, winning a wild card game, winning a series. I mean, you never know at that point. And the dreams just live at that moment when Austin Jackson reaches first base and the Mariners win it. So let's end things on that note. And I'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks here.
1-1 tie, bottom of the 11th inning, two on, one away. Here's the set by Pestano, and the 1-2 to Jackson. Swinging a ground ball to the second baseman, Green over to second for one. The relay to first, safe! Mariners win it! Brad Miller will score from third. A walk-off fielder's choice! The Mariners win it! 2-1 in the bottom of the 11th inning, and this improbable season continues. Holy smokes! The Mariners will live for another day, and game 162 is coming tomorrow with meaning. Holy smokes, what a finish. The speed of Austin Jackson, safe at first on the 4-6 fielder's choice. They get Taylor at second. The relay to first was late. Jackson was safe. Brad Miller crosses home plate with the winning run, 2-1. What a finish here at Safeco Field. The Mariners win it in 11, 2-1, with Felix Hernandez on the mound tomorrow.
See you later!